Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and thank you for joining us for DW's Africa Link program. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Jen Nyinge.
And let's jump to our main stories of the day. Fighting between regional militias in central Somalia leave at least 29 people dead and 50 wounded. A presidential candidate tells us her worries ahead of the elections.
There is the possibility that, you know, the presidential elections could be deferred to sometime in December, but that remains to be seen.
A Kenyan non-profit company launches a software to monitor the U.S. elections for fraud and irregularities.
They even want to try to rig the election at the polling booths. And believe me, there's a lot going on. Do you ever hear these people? They say there's nothing going on.
And by the way, Africa Link is now not just radio, but social radio.
Absolutely, because we shall be monitoring what you are saying on social media regarding the two stories you've just heard about.
But before that, let's listen to some news happening in Africa and around the world.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. Talks among almost 200 nations are being held in Marrakech, Morocco, starting this Monday and until November the 18th to try to find ways to implement the global climate deal, the Paris Agreement. 100 countries have ratified the agreement, which entered into force last Friday. The Executive Secretary of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, Patricia Espinosa, said at the opening that she was happy about developments so far, but warned,
"It is also a timely reminder of the high expectations that are now placed upon us all. Achieving the aims and ambitions of the Paris Agreement is not a given. We have embarked on an effort to change the course of two centuries of carbon-intense development."
Luxembourg's foreign minister Jean Asselborn on Monday accused Turkish authorities of using methods like those employed by the Nazis in a crackdown following July's coup attempt. In an interview with German broadcaster Deutschlandfunk, Asselborn didn't rule out economic sanctions to exert pressure on Ankara over human rights issues. Reacting to Asselborn, Turkish Foreign Minister Hüseyin Çelik warned today that relations between his country and the EU were very fragile. Shortly before the US presidential election on Tuesday, November the 8th, the FBI cleared Democrat candidate Hillary Clinton of any wrongdoing in a new email probe. The head of the federal police, James Comey, said that no criminal charges will be brought against Clinton. While there was relief in the Clinton camp, Republican contender Donald Trump reacted to the news by saying,
"Right now she is being protected by a rigged system. It's a totally rigged system. I've been saying it for a long time."
A new poll by U.S. media released on Monday shows Clinton holding a 4 percentage point lead over Trump. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Fighting between regional militias in the city of Galkayo in central Somalia killed at least 30 people, officials from both sides said on Monday. More than 50 people were wounded. The fighting in Galkayo, a city divided between the partially autonomous regions of Puntland and Galmudug, erupted on Sunday following a dispute over building plans. Doctors at hospitals in Galkayo, who asked not to be named for fear of reprisals, put the overall death toll at 50. South African President Jacob Zuma has lodged a complaint with the Office of the Public Protector over a leaked audio recording of his meeting with the anti-graft watchdog, his office said on Monday. Zuma's discussion with the former public protector Thuli Madonsela during her investigation into allegations of influence peddling was broadcast on a private television channel at the weekend. In Sierra Leone, 3 minutes of silence were observed today to honour the victims of the Ebola epidemic. Last year on November 7th, the World Health Organization declared the country free of the virus. Almost 4,000 people died of the disease in Sierra Leone in less than a year. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Christina Kripal.
We begin in Somalia, where fighting between forces in Galmudug and Puntland left at least 29 people dead and scores injured, officials said on Monday. The fighting broke out 1 week after a ceasefire was reached. The clash happened in the town of Galkayo, which straddles their common border and is divided under the control of rival clan militias. Both militias offer political support to Somalia's UN-backed government based in the capital, Mogadishu. I spoke to Somali female presidential aspirant Fadumo Daib and started by asking her about the security situation in Somalia now that the electoral process is underway.
The security situation in Galkayo is deteriorating rapidly, as is also Mogadishu. Just the other day, or the other night, there was an explosion here at the National Intelligence headquarters. And also, you know, followed by sporadic gunfire. Unfortunately, this seems to be picking up speed, and it will only increase as the elections or the selections come closer. It is very unfortunate that this is happening. But of utmost concern is the situation in Galkayo, where just, you know, on Sunday there were more than 25 people killed, with more than 80 people injured, and 85,000 almost displaced. So it is very, very grave. The situation is grave and very worrisome.
And are you optimistic that they will go on according to plan without a hitch?
This remains to be seen. So far, we have seen the deferment of these elections on several occasions. There is the possibility that it could again, the presidential elections could be deferred to sometime in December, but that remains to be seen. I am not holding my breath. Based on the patterns that we have seen before, the processes that we have seen before, there is going to be a likelihood, a high probability that, yes, once again, we will perhaps fall behind the deadlines.
And how free and fair are these elections going to be?
These are not free and fair selections. They are far from it. This is a rigged election. It is a corrupt election. It is an election or selection that is unconstitutional. The 4.5 clan-based apartheid system is not recognized by the Somali constitution. It is not as per the Somali traditions and culture, and it is certainly not an Islamic way of conducting affairs in this country, because it is a system that is oppressive. It's a system that is subjugative. It excludes the majority of the Somalis, particularly women and the youth.
I was speaking to Somali female presidential aspirant Fadumo Daib. Still to come, a Kenyan non-profit company, Ushahidi, has developed a software tool to monitor electoral irregularities in the US elections tomorrow. But first, Amnesty International has filed a petition in a Nairobi court to stop the Kenyan government from repatriating more than 500,000 Somali refugees from Kenya's Dadaab camp to Somalia on the 30th of this month. The petition has been supported by other civil society organizations. James Shimanyula was in the court and filed this report.
As the countdown continues to November the 30th, when the Kenyan government plans to repatriate more than 500,000 Somali refugees back to their homeland in Somalia, Amnesty International and the Kenya National Commission on Human Rights have filed a joint petition challenging the repatriation. A court hearing for the petition has been set for November the 21st. Justice Nyang'aya, Amnesty International Director for Kenya, says that some of the refugees expected to be sent to Somalia may join Al-Shabaab militants and pose security threat to Kenya and the East African region.
Kenya has expressed very strongly the issue of insecurity caused by Al-Shabaab. And if we are pushing the Somalis against their wish to go back into Somalia, obviously we are multiplying the risk of security for us, because there is open recruitment for Al-Shabaab of the returnees.
The question that arises is what Amnesty International and its partner in the petition, Kenya National Commission on Human Rights, plan to do if the petition is thrown out by the court. Justice Nyang'aya again.
We will hold the government to account. We don't have powers of our own. We don't have an army to go and look after refugees in Somalia. But we expect that the Kenyan government will do the right thing to protect humanity, including refugees that have been in their midst.
Nyangaya also had this message for the Kenyan government.
Let Somali be safe and encourage Somalis to go back voluntarily rather than forceful repatriation of Somalis back to their land.
Victor Nyamori is from Amnesty International. He is familiar with the Dadaab camp and the concerns of the refugees who live there.
They are very much worried. They don't know the options and they are fearing of what the government will do beyond November 30th.
Veteran constitutional and civil rights lawyer John Khaminwa believes that Kenya is failing to live up to its obligations to the Dadaab refugees.
The issue of refugees is governed by international conventions. We have signed these international conventions, and we have to make sure that we observe the provisions of the international conventions. We have also got our own local legislation that look after the rights of the refugees. My view is that what we are doing to refugees at Dadaab refugee camp is completely wrong and in a breach of international law. We should not send these Somalis back to Somalia at all.
That report was filed by James Shimanyula. We stay in Kenya, where they have developed a software tool that will be used to monitor the US elections for possible fraud and irregularities. The Kenyan non-profit company Ushahidi launched a special website where voters can report any problems they experience when casting their ballots. This comes as the integrity of the United States voting system has been brought into question. Malte Rover-Kalman reports.
There's been much talk about rigging and fraud in the US elections, especially coming from the Republican candidate Donald Trump. Here's what he said at a rally a few weeks back.
They even want to try to rig the election at the polling booths. And believe me, there's a lot going on. Do you ever hear these people? They say there's nothing going on. People that have died 10 years ago are still voting. Illegal immigrants are voting. So many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is very, very common.
Some U.S. voters now question if their elections are fair. The online platform Ushahidi will soon have an answer for them. Their website usaelectionmonitor.com lets voters report any problems at the polling stations. Ballot papers may have run out, for example, or disabled people could have difficulties accessing the polling booth. Ushahidi collects and maps all this information to get the bigger picture. Here's Nat Manning, one of the executives, speaking from San Francisco.
My real hope is that on Tuesday or Wednesday, we looked at the report and 99.9% of reports are everything went great, because 99.9% of the time in America, we're lucky enough that that's the case.
There's actually not much evidence that large-scale voter fraud has ever happened in the U.S. A recent study, for example, found there have only been 31 cases of impersonation fraud in all elections between 2000 and 2014. The single states, parties, as well as outside observers all independently monitor the polling. So why do people need Ushahidi?
Because it allows regular citizens to raise their voice. It puts a lot more eyes out there. And importantly, it creates a feeling of transparency and engagement in most countries in the world. Like, yeah, you can have a vote, but it often breaks out in violence.
That's what happened in Kenya in late 2007 and early 2008. A controversial election sparked violence between ethnic groups. More than 1,000 people died. It was then that Ushahidi was founded. Kenyans could report violent incidents also in remote areas. Ushahidi verified and mapped all the reports. This provided a far more complete picture of the situation than news outlets had given at the time. And now, the tool that emerged from a crisis in Kenya could help to keep the US elections fair and transparent.
Malte Rover-Kalman. So Jane, what are people saying about the stories we've just covered?
The conversation, Isaac, is around the interview you did with the Somali female presidential aspirant, Fadumo. And I've got a tweet from Eunice Adam, and he says, Fadumo, you are the right person to lead Somalia, but Somalis are not ready for a real president because they are voiceless. Mm-hmm. What's your take, Isaac?
I mean, in case she's elected, she'll be the first female, you know, Somali president, and she'll go down the books of history.
Absolutely. But Abdul Razak Hassan is of another thought. He says, sorry about your dream. Our culture, religion and current situation doesn't allow you to become the president because majority of people in parliament are men.
Yes, Somalia is a deeply conservative and traditional country. Anyway, Jane, I'm afraid we have to leave it at that. And you were listening to Africa Link with me, Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Jane Nyingi.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes here on Africa Link, misconceptions about cremating the dead in Ghana. Plus, Cameroon's non-functioning dialysis center.
Only seven machines are functioning from the 20 that we have, and that is very destabilizing for the patients.
In Ghana, like in many African countries, people are usually buried the traditional way, in a coffin, in a grave. However, a growing number of people are opting for cremation. As Isaac Kalechi in Accra reports, those who favor cremation say it is an uphill struggle to convince their countrymen to accept the practice because of various misconceptions. But they say that slowly they are getting results.
Weekends in Ghana are a critical time for families burying deceased relatives. Some of the dead, either rich or poor, established beforehand how their funerals are to be organized, who should attend, and where they should be buried. Like in other African countries, traditionally, people in Ghana are placed in a coffin and buried in a grave at a cemetery. But this is beginning to change. Asiedu Mante is a former deputy governor of Ghana's Central Bank. He is 75 years old and has instructed his family to cremate him when he dies. He explains why he prefers this solution.
The soul in you is like light. Now, it's dwelt in this body for 75, like I am 75 now. If you are very prayerful, you are very religious, you attract a lot of light. So part of that light gets imprisoned in the physical body. The quickest way of releasing that light is to set the body to fire.
Only 10 years ago, it was rare to find people in Ghana like Asiedu Mante who want to be cremated. Godfred Otu is a master cremator at Ghana's biggest crematorium at the Lashabib Funeral Home. He says the wish to be cremated is growing among some Ghanaians, and not only because of religious reasons.
Gradually picking up because, one, there's no space for burial. Two, the perception that it was meant for a particular section of religion, a sect of religion, is now being gradually eroding away.
The issue of lack of space at several cemeteries is one of the main reasons for the emerging trend of cremation. I am walking through Ghana's biggest cemetery in Accra, the Awudome Burial Ground. The cemetery is full and one can hardly find any space to dig a new grave. Advocates for cremation like Godfred Otu say the difficulty of securing space for burials, as well as the cost of burying the dead in the Ghanaian traditional way, make the argument for cremation even stronger.
Compared to burial, cremation is cheap, a normal burial service. You need to pay a vault fee. You need to buy a casket. You need to pay the sextons at the cemetery to dig and tile the place. You do the epitaph. Then you need to have a tombstone over the grave.
Funeral homes say it costs about $5,000 to organize traditional Ghanaian funerals as compared to about $2,000 for a cremation. The Ghana Cremation Society says its biggest challenge is the opposition to the building of crematoriums across the country. Victoria Boyduku is with the society.
Districts deny us plots in the cemetery to build crematoriums. So under normal circumstances, if each cemetery could have a space for cremation, it would have been a service to the whole country.
Not all Ghanaians are convinced by the argument that cremation will save Ghana's cemeteries. I asked 35-year-old public sector worker Douglas Ajeman Kusi if he wishes to be cremated.
Not at all. I won't even consider it. I feel it's not dignifying enough, because as a human being, when you die, your family must at least see your remains and then lay it to rest. Even Jesus Christ was laid to rest. He was never burnt. So
the Ghana Cremation Society says a lot of education is needed to change attitudes towards cremation. They have their work cut out for them.
Isaac Kalechi with that report.
Health check.
Cameroon says it is waiting for German technicians to come and help after patients suffering from kidney failure blocked access to hospitals in protest. They are complaining that they have not been receiving treatment since hemodialysis equipment broke down. The main referral hospital says Cameroon does not have technicians to repair the machines. Several patients have already died for lack of treatment. The problem has occurred regularly at all treatment centers in the country. Mark Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Policemen have been deployed here at the General Hospital in Yaoundé to calm down striking patients suffering from kidney failure. 60-year-old Ngala Priscilla, who was receiving treatment at the hemodialysis center of the hospital, says they are upset over the way they are treated.
When we come here, the place that water used to function before the machine will be functioned will be bad. Always problem, even to the end that the nurses will not even have gloves. Instead of 4 hours dialysis, we are not dialyzing 3 hours, which is not correct. Even the kidneys that they are using for us, they are not using the right kidney. They will take a small kidney and use to an elderly person. They take big kidney and use to the small person, which is not normal. It's a disgrace for us. We are not slaves in this country.
The protest was called by the Association of People Suffering Kidney Defects. Its president, Balokok Bertrand, says 4 of their members have died within 3 weeks just because of poor service at the center. He says they will continue blocking the access to the hospital for other patients 3 hours every day until their problems are solved.
Only 7 machines are functioning from the 20 that we have, and that is very destabilizing for the patients. A patient who had to be treated on Monday is treated on Wednesday or Thursday. The water room that is vital in dialysis treatment hasn't been functioning regularly for a year now. If that room is not repaired, you can't do any dialysis, even if you have 200 or 300 machines. That's why I mobilized 70 patients to protest until a solution is found.
The center has 17 dialysis machines. Only 8 of those work, and they have to serve close to 200 patients. Instead of the 4 hours of treatment, patients get only 3 hours of dialysis. Dr. Ashung Tangtan, assistant administrator at the hospital, says they are waiting for technicians from Germany to arrive.
Our technicians tried to repair these machines. They actually ordered the parts that were lacking. They fit them, but they don't work. What is being done now is to get the technicians from the manufacturers of the machine. The manufacturers are in Germany.
Cameroon has 10 centers for the treatment of acute hemodialysis complications in end-stage renal disease patients. Here at the treatment center in Betwa, 6-year-old Alvira Hawa is being attended to by doctors. She says she was brought here by her parents after the treatment center in Yaoundé could no longer receive patients because the equipment didn't work.
Moki Kinzeka with that report. Time now to take a look at sports and to discuss that with is DW's sports editor, Chuck Penfold. Let's begin with the big match of the weekend. High-flying Leipzig hosted Mainz and thrashed it 3-1, which enabled it to move to the top slot with Bayern Munich that drew 1-1 with Hoffenheim. Shouldn't this worry Bayern's manager, Carlo Ancelotti?
Bayern are just not firing on all cylinders. Some games are looking better than others. There's also the draws against Cologne and Frankfurt, which were quite surprising, so he won't be happy with that. He's quite a different coach than Guardiola was. He talks about quiet leadership. Guardiola was much more intense and much more in the player's face. So there was always going to be a period of adjustment. I think he'll be concerned, but not worried yet. He's vastly experienced. He's a proven winner. So I think what he'll be doing now is just focusing on how to get a more consistent performance out of his new team.
Yes, Schalke has also got back its confidence, winning 5 matches in a row. Do you think it can maintain its pace given that there are some few tough matches ahead.
Their schedule in the league isn't that bad around this time of the year. Wolfsburg, after the international break, that could be a significant test because they're much improved under their new coach. Then they're in Leipzig 2 weeks after that. That, I think, will be the toughest match for Schalke for the rest of this calendar year. The others are relegation candidates Darmstadt and then newly promoted Freiburg, who shouldn't be too much trouble. And then, of course, Hamburg, a team that everybody's been beating up on recently. So a couple of tough games, but I think they can keep going.
Dortmund against Hamburg was another match that had 7 goals in total, 5-2. Aubameyang scored 4 for his club, Borussia Dortmund, and this brought him level with Cologne's Anthony Modest. Now, how do you rate these two guys?
These guys are both red hot. They both have 11 goals in the league. As you say, Gabon international Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang this weekend really abused Hamburg's defense with 4 goals.
4 was really, 3 in the first half was really, bad enough. Yeah,
catching up to Modest, who only scored 3 against Hamburg when Cologne played them. They're both great strikers. Aubameyang's extremely fast. Now, he was, of course, coming back after being suspended by coach Thomas Tuchel in midweek for Dortmund's Champions League match, apparently over a trip he took to Milan.
What's wrong with Hamburg? I mean, I really don't get it here.
Everybody's asking themselves the same question. You know, they're the one club that's never been relegated from the Bundesliga. You would have thought with Dietmar Beiersdorfer, he would have been a good sporting director because he has a history with the club. He just doesn't seem to be able to get it done. They've just seemed to have been in chaos for several years, changing coaches quite often. Now the Beiersdorf is really under fire. I get the impression there's something at the club, maybe at president level or chairman level. I think that's where the problem really is.
Now, when you look at the table, it is different from previous years where we had traditional strong teams. I mean, this time around, you have teams that were considered underdogs, teams like Leipzig, Hoffenheim and Berlin. What does this tell us about club development in Germany?
I think what it tells us, in part at least, is if upper management come up with a good medium to long-term plan and implement it over a few years, you can do big things. The money has to be there. Leipzig have Red Bull, the energy drink behind them, and Hoffenheim have SAP, the software company behind them. But it's been more than just about money. They haven't gone out really and spent huge amounts on players. They've done things very wisely. The interesting thing about Leipzig is they have a policy of recruiting players who are only 23 or younger. Now, they have one exception. They've got Kyriakos Papadopoulos, who's 24, but he's only in on loan. The other thing it tells us, I think, or one other thing it tells us, is injuries can really hurt. And Dortmund's a case in point there.
DW Sports editor Chuck Penfold. So, Jen, what's trending on social media?
Tomorrow, U.S. presidential election is a big topic. In fact, it's trending on different hashtags. Hashtag U.S. election, hashtag Team Trump, and hashtag Team Clinton, among others.
And I believe, the predictions are becoming harder as the hour, gets closer, isn't it?
Absolutely. But there is a China monkey that has predicted Donald Trump will carry the day. Oh. Isaac, remember, this is the same monkey that predicted Portugal win in the 2016 European Football Championships in July.
Interesting indeed. Should we go by the monkey predictions? Anyway, where does this leave, Hillary Clinton? I mean, when are predictions for her?
We can't really say she's on the bad side because there has been a positive prediction about her in Nigeria.
And what is being said in Nigeria?
Nigerian prophet TB Joshua has predicted Clinton is going to win against Trump, but with a very narrow victory.
Oh, okay. Tell me more about what people are saying on the social media.
Okay, on our Facebook page, I've just received a message from Ali Omar, and he says Trump is better than Clinton because she's against any change. But Ayub Enhasis is of another thought. He believes Clinton is the real change.
Anyway, let's wait and see what the Americans will decide through the ballot box. And to keep the conversation going, you can still send your comments and suggestions on our Facebook page. That is DW/Africa. No, DW Africa. And that brings us to the end of this edition. For more news on the continent, visit dw.com/Africa.
Or follow us on DW Africa Facebook page, where you can listen the entire show at your own leisure in any part of the world.
And until tomorrow, same time, bye from us.